I'm from Lethbridge in Alberta, in Canada, and the plan of the talk is I'll briefly, very briefly, review the Rey-Chaudhury equation and its importance, and then try to make a case for the quantum Rey-Chaudhury equation, why it is necessary and how one can go about trying to do it. Then I'll talk about some implications for the singularity theorems in gravitational physics, implications for curvature singularities, and a couple of applications, namely what I call the Einstein equation of state and for cosmology. The work is based on this paper, which is on the archives, and a couple of papers, well, which hopefully is on the make, are on the making, but this one is a couple of months old. Now, Rey-Chaudhury equation, let's get straight to the point. If you have a congruence of geodesics, which basically means a bunch of geodesics, it could be time-like, it could be null, and this is like a bunch of them given by this velocity field. Sorry for the small print. It's difficult to judge how big or how small you need to make it. This is just the direction of the velocity u, and these are just, you know, cross-sections of the velocity fields. Then the expansion theta is defined, roughly speaking, as how fast or how slow the geodesics converge or diverge. And as in the above figure, it's negative because we see that they're converging. Lambda is the affine parameter. So it's dd lambda of log of v, where v is the three volume that we see here. And then ua is the velocity field, take its divergence, then take its derivative along the geodesic, which is this, change orders, and we pick up our curvature term. Then we make this into a total derivative and you know, subtract what's left over. And this is the curvature term, which comes from here. This is zero from the geodesic equation, as we can see. And we are left with this thing here. So it's pure geometry. And then in the next page, we define the induced 3 metric on, you know, perpendicular to the geodesics. And then take the trace of the convergence, ua semicolon b. And then write it as, this is a second rank tensor, we write it as a traceless symmetric part, which is known as a shear, the antisymmetric part, which is known as twist, and the trace, which is known as the expansion, which is physically the most interesting. And then if you take the trace of the equation that I had in the previous transparency, which is this, we get this equation here, and trace defined as theta, we get that this equation is the first order equation known as the Rey-Chaudhury equation. What's important is for hypersurface orthogonal geodesics, when for which the twist is zero, you see all the terms on the right-hand side are negative. So theta squared with the minus sign, this is a minus sign. This is this quantity here, apart from the minus sign, is positive from the strong energy condition. So the Einstein equation enters right here, nothing before here. So everything on the right-hand side is negative. Therefore, if the geodesics are initially converging, say theta naught is theta at some lambda equals zero, which is initially converging, then just by integrating it, we see that all the geodesics focus, what's important, is in a finite proper time. Okay, so every geodesic is basically due to the attractive nature of gravity. What's important is it's in a finite proper time, so you don't have to wait for long. And this was discovered by Rey-Chaudhury in 1955, and also by Landau and Lifshitz. The year, well, depends on which edition of Landau and Lifshitz we're looking at. The earliest, I think, 1961 or something, which I came across anyway. So then, now we look at the previous picture. What Rey-Chaudhury equation tells you is that it focuses, all the geodesics focus to a caustic, okay, in a finite time as we see here. In fact, by going into the past, you can do more. You can show that all, under most reasonable energy conditions, or maybe all energy conditions, what happens is the geodesics actually focus sometime before and sometimes in the past, so you have a set of conjugate points. So geodesics start from somewhere and end at somewhere, okay? And it's by virtue of the Rey-Chaudhury equation. And these are known as conjugate points, and this is a geodesic congruence. Now, the implications of that are of course, as Hawking and Penrose found out, were enormous. So they derived the singularity theorems based, well, a lot or much on the Rey-Chaudhury equation. And we see that conjugate points, the points, the two ends that we saw in the previous transparency, occur due to the Rey-Chaudhury equation. If there are conjugate points, then geodesics are no longer maximal length curves. And I don't have time to, you know, do the rigorous proof here, but this is an analogy. This is curved space, but with an Euclidean signature. If you have points A and B, say, on the same longitude, both in North America in this case, then the great circle from A to B is the shortest distance. But there is another great circle which goes all around. That's not the shortest distance. That's, in fact, the longest. And the reason for the other great circle being the longest is that you see there are a pair of conjugate points on that longer great circle, basically the North Pole and the South Pole. Okay? So if you have a pair of conjugate points, then it's no longer the minimal. For Lorentzian signature, the minimal and the maximum gets interchanged, and geodesics are no longer maximal length curves if you have a pair of conjugate points, which from the Rechauer equation one sees you always have a pair of conjugate points. However, maximal geodesics are predicted by a bunch of global arguments, and there are lots of excellent references where they prove it. The first papers, of course, are Hawking and Penrose. Maximal geodesics are predicted by global arguments, on the other hand. Therefore, the contradiction is resolved by with the result that sufficiently long geodesics, they cannot exist. And four geodesics are incomplete. And therefore, that's by definition the proper definition of singularity, not R going to infinity, not any other thing. So geodesics are incomplete. And it depends on the Rachaudhuri equation. I don't know how many of you know about Rachaudhuri. He was alive not too far in the past. He was an Indian physicist. And this is when he lived. Now note that from the Rachaudhuri equation, there are a few things. Firstly, the generality. So as I mentioned, it's valid for, and all the previous arguments that I said are valid for all reasonable space-time, because gravity is universal and gravity is attractive. So it's attractive nature of gravity which makes it happen. Secondly, a technical point is that in the Rachaudhuri equation, we use a fluid picture. So we have a velocity field u, which is valid all over space-time, we assume. And this fluid picture, well, Rachaudhuri in his original papers, he actually thought of fluids and gases and that kind of thing. But then you can do away with actual fluids, but this fluid picture still persists. Also, you can arrive at a similar or the same result from the geodesic equation, which is this, and where eta A is the Jacobi field which connects neighboring geodesics, and they also, the vector which connects neighboring geodesics, the spatial part, also goes to zero for a finite lambda. However, just as what we used in the derivation, like the kinematical statements and the energy conditions, Einstein equation, derivatives, everything, the geodesic equation, they're all classical. Therefore, the Rechauer equation ought to get modified just as Newton's law gets modified, right? I mean, there must be some correction. It can't be valid forever, although very, very powerful. And yes? Didn't I call that? It's a typo, I'm sorry. I meant geodesic deviation equation, absolutely. Thank you very much. So yes, deviation equation. So they will get modified. And one way to try to go about is looking at the Rachaudhuri equation and try to do a Ehrenfest type of analysis or expectation type of analysis, because just as Newton's law gets replaced by the Ehrenfest theorem or geodesic equation with something similar, the Rachaudhuri equation should be replaced by that as well. So that's the idea. Now, one way to go about doing it is, as I said, you need a velocity field, and then you do the derivatives and that kind of thing. How about trying to find a quantum velocity field, whatever it means? So a velocity field, a field, but which is quantum in some precise sense. Now, that's the way we will proceed. Now, I was looking for such a field anyway, and I did find one. Which has been there for a long time in various contexts, actually, not just one. Now, to go to that, just for simplicity and for demonstration purposes, I will first take the non-relativistic limit and try to do what I'm trying to do, and then do the relativistic generalization. So by non-relativistic, I mean Newtonian. So the velocity field goes to the real, like three velocities. The lambda goes to the coordinate time. This r u u goes to the d square v, which is the Poisson equation, 4 pi 0, which is greater than 0. And then the Rechauer equation in the non-relativistic limits looks like that. And the focusing theorem is valid. As you can see, now the right-hand side is all negative now because of the Poisson equation. Okay, so it's the same kind of conclusion hold good. So now they focus in finite time, just that the proper time is the same as coordinate time. So a velocity field exists. And so now we go to a quantum fluid picture. And what we do is the following. We have a wave function which describes a fluid or whatever, however dense or less dense or zero density, whatever you want to consider, and write the quantum wave function. As a real part times an exponential I times a real part, so R and S are real. And as usual, it's a quantum picture, so normalizable, single-valued, and that kind of thing. For example, a complete set of wave functions for any potential that you can find could suffice. And then you identify the velocity of the fluid, which is dx dt, as h bar over m, imaginary product of the gradient of psi over psi, which is nothing but h bar over m times gradient of s, the phase, okay? And this is a quantum velocity field it's a field, and we'll see why it's more like velocity. We substitute this in the Schrodinger equation, take the real and imaginary parts. The real part the imaginary parts gives the usual probability conservation law, and the imaginary part, interestingly, gives precisely the Newton's law, see, force equals mass times acceleration, plus an extra term, which is known as the quantum potential term. So we get, so what's the interpretation of this? Well, firstly, one assumes that initially you have an ensemble of particles, just as in quantum mechanics, like you have many of them. They're all initially distributed as rho, which is the real actual density of particles at time zero, as psi zero squared. So psi zero is zero means time, okay? And this is known as quantum equilibrium. And the probability conservation equation, which is this, ensures that the density of particles continue to remain distributed as psi squared. So you start off distributing particles as psi zero squared, and they continue as psi squared for all future times. And then each particle, now don't dismiss it right away. Okay, so each particle follows individual trajectories subjected not to the potential that we had in the Schrodinger equation, but the potential plus an extra so-called quantum potential terms, which looks like this, depends on the wave function and lots of aspects to it. And these trajectories are known as quantile trajectories or Bohmian trajectories, because David Bohm was the person who devised this, who brought out this picture. And then the trajectories follow, and then make a measurement, and what you get is what you get. There's no need for the collapse of the wave function. Now, this is a trajectory picture, and for example, I lifted this picture from this reference, and this is one of the first references where they explicitly worked it out. This is a Young's double slit experiment. So you distribute the particles according to the wave function of light or whatever you want to interfere, and these are actual trajectories, okay? And then if you measure the trajectories on the screen, you do indeed end up getting white and black bands, right? Like dark and bright fringes, okay? So the aspects are, so these are the trajectories, these are dark and light fringes. There's one more aspect which I will come back to it later, but we see here that these trajectories, they don't really cross, and we'll talk about more later. And it's not just this. I thought it's a beautiful picture. It gives all the results, but it's not just this. It's any, take any quantum mechanics graduate textbook or whatever, and to look at any experiment, and people have worked out all these experiments, and they have found the results always match. And there's no reason why it should not match, because the only dynamical input that went into this whole picture is the Schrodinger equation, nothing else. It's the Schrodinger equation with the interpretation. One may like the interpretation, may not like the interpretation, but there's nothing to differ with the results, because the results are identical to the Copenhagen, whatever results we know of. The classical limit of these trajectories, which h bar going to zero, will give you, as you can see, just, a Newton's law with no quantum potential, with h bar going to zero. And as far as I know, this is one of the clearest transitions to classical mechanics from quantum mechanics, just takes h bar equal to zero. And this picture was suggested by De Broglie in 27, Bohm in 1952, but it occurs in many other contexts, they just don't give these names, okay? In superconductivity, in superfluidity, in Bose-Einstein condensates, where there sometimes is a potential, and then it becomes the so-called Gross-Pitevsky equation, but it's just this picture which they use, and they just don't call it Bohm, and they just don't draw trajectories, okay? So I just wanted to emphasize, it's a correct picture, and it's a valid picture. So now, therefore, in the quantum Rai-Chaudhuri equation, we know that the classical trajectories don't exist anymore because, classical trajectories don't exist in quantum mechanics. But we make no mistake by replacing them by these quantile trajectories, because they all give the right results, and whatever we get from it, we ought to take it seriously. So the way we change or modify the Rai-Chaudhuri equation is, if you remember, the Rai-Chaudhuri equation, we use the geodesic equation. In the non-relativistic picture, we use Newton's law, which is the Poisson's equation. And instead of the Poisson's equation, we have to, you can work this out, we have to add the extra quantum potential term. And this is the, so the red term is the quantum correction, and this is the full Naurai-Chaudhuri equation. And again, just as the, in the previous picture, the h-bar going to zero just gives you back whatever we had earlier. Okay? Now the question is, now the question immediately arises, one of the question is whether this term is repulsive or attractive. Because if it's repulsive, we want it to be repulsive. Everybody wanted things to be repulsive in the Rai-Chaudhuri equation because that would counteract the gravity and, you know, the focusing could be, could possibly be avoided. So that's the question. Now I tried testing, well, so now you see this depends on the wave function, right? So you have to have the, or the amplitude of the wave function, not the phase. So you have to check, you know, with various wave functions, which I did for, you know, starting with the simplest wave function, for example, a Gaussian, which is a reasonable wave function. And then for that, this term is indeed positive. It's just, you know, put it back in any software or whatever, or do it by hand. And this is what you get. And the answer is plus, which means it's repulsive. And 1 over L power 4, where L is the length scale that's there in the Gaussian, so the spread of the Gaussian, if you like. You could put in some interaction terms in the Schrödinger equation, like, you know, G psi square. Again, this is known as the Gross-Pitevsky equation. And there are exact solutions for certain boundary conditions. For this equation, you could put those things in equation. Again, it turns out to be repulsive at short distance. So it sounds interesting that, but you know, it's so many you can test by hand, 3, 4, maybe 5, you know, and that's to the extent that I could do. So it seems that, so it's, it seemed interesting to me that, you know, it turns out to be repulsive in all cases. How, yes?
I didn't understand, what
are you doing with the growth? Oh, I wanted to just, you know, look at some reasonable wave functions to see if this term is positive or negative. Now, the wave functions must be a solution of some wave equation, right? So for the Schrodinger wave equation, I used a wave packet solution, which is like a Gaussian. And I was just looking at physically reasonable solutions. So what if you have a background spacetime with a very weak interaction between the, you know, between the particles, let's say. So such a situation is described like just a condensate. Okay, like a Bose-Einstein condensate, let's say, but with a very weak interaction term, so almost zero.
Do you associate the conservation model to everything?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so I think, so the question is whether there is this Bohmian picture for a different wave equation, and I think there is. Because once again, the reason being like this equation is used in the context of Bose-Einstein condensates, and they use that, you know, Bohmian picture, they don't call it that. They don't, but they use that psi equals r times e power is, then they look at the, I mean, the equations that they get are identical to the Bohmian equation. They, sometimes they draw trajectories, sometimes they don't. So.
Identical means the conservation equation is exactly the same.
I'm just wondering. I have to check if it's exactly the same, but there is a probability interpretation. Okay. So the exact form of the probability might be different. Yes?
So that term in red, that's
No, no, no.
Or does it come from, like you say, you're letting B go to B plus?
Yeah, it is. But no, it's not an ansatz. So the way I derive it is, so if you look at the derivation of the Rai-Chaudhuri equation, we use the geodesic equation. So if you look at the non-relativistic limit instead of the geodesic equation here, we'd have the Newton's law here. And the Newton's, instead of the Newton's law, like geodesic equation, this is zero. For Newton's law, this is like mass times acceleration. So it's not zero, it's the Poisson term. It's this term here, right? Instead of this term, now you have mass, like mass times acceleration is this plus the quantum potential.
There's no relativistic version that has that term in it.
Well, I've not done the relativistic version yet.
Oh, all right.
So this is just for demonstration. This is
Rai-Chaudhuri with that, I thought.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I'll come to the relativistic version. This is just to like kind of see how the quantum picture can be used. Okay. But in the Newtonian limit, this is not like this is a what I have here is a derivation. No, there's no box. There's these are just.
D theta dt, you've got a sigma sigma term.
sigma sigma?
Yeah, the second term.
Second term, right there.
Oh, but you can define it even in the non-relativistic context,
but at
right?
At the moment, that's still non-relativistic.
Oh, yeah, this is all non. So you have, okay, so to answer your question, there is a non, there is a version of Rajchaudhuri equation completely for the Newtonian context.
And that's what this is.
That's what this is. So this going to zero gives you Rajchaudhuri for Newtonian gravity.
All right.
Right. So okay, so you have, so you can test a lot of, trying to, anyways, test these things for a lot of wave function, but it gets better. Why does it get better? Well, let's look at this definition of the velocity, the quantum velocities field, so to speak, which is dx dt equals gradient of s, and write it once again here. Now, and let's look at those, that Young's double slit experiment picture once again. This is just the picture which I had here. Now, there's a reason why these quantum trajectories, they don't cross. There's a reason that, and you can zoom in this as much as you want. It still doesn't cross. It's just, you know, you get more and more trajectories, but none of them cross, okay? None of them cross or meet. The reason, of course, is that the velocity equation is a single single valued, of course, but I forgot to write here. It's a first order equation. That's the point. So you have the velocity field, which is this red arrows all over the place, and the integral curve, since it's a first order equation, the integral curves are unique. It's just one of the basic theorems in differential equations, right? The integral curves are unique, therefore the streamlines are unique. They don't meet or cross, and that's why the streamlines which you see here, and again, this is a well-known result in this quantum trajectory or this Bohmian picture, that they never meet or they never cross, okay? And it's the proof is as simple as that. It's a first-order guiding equation instead of second order, okay? So the trajectories do not end in a caustic or focus, and they go on forever. So instead of, you know, this coming down here, they just, you know, they get very close. They could get very close, but they never meet each other or cross each other just because, you know, the velocity field is assumed to be single-valued because the wave function is single-valued and that kind of thing, okay? So therefore, they go on forever. Therefore, so that's interesting. Now, coming to the relativistic generalization. Yes. So the only place... Yeah. But if the wave function is zero, that's a good question.
Not the wave function is zero, but the gradient of the well, that's also
fine. Yeah. So if the wave function is zero, there are no particles.
No, I was thinking of where the gradient of the event, where the velocity field
varies. But that wouldn't, like, you know, if in a particular place it, you know.
We
can talk about it later, but yeah, I don't think, well, we can.
Maybe
but
more
yeah, because the only place where this could possibly, this interpretation could have problems is where the wave function itself vanishes, which is a node, but then you don't have any particles there anyway to start off with.
Yeah.
So, but we can talk, that could be a subtlety which we might have to worry about later. So I did think about it. So, for relativistic, we start off instead of a Schrodinger, we start off with the Klein-Gordon equation, as you can see here. This term is for conformal invariance. This term could be there if you get at a Klein-Gordon equation from a Dirac equation in certain ways, well, certain formalism, you get this term. So I just kept as much as, you know, I could keep. And then again, instead of psi, you have phi, capital phi, the scalar field. And again, this incorporates the Dirac field, at least at this level. But, you know, the scalar field as a real part times an imaginary part. And then you do, you know, whatever we did before, just make appropriate relativistic generalization. Now, the imaginary parts gives something like the probability distribution or the probability conservation, the counterpart of that. And the real part gives this on-shell condition, which if you take the derivative, we, as usual, we do get the geodesic equation. But you see on the right-hand side, it's the geodesic equation, but with the quantum terms, with the h-bar squared terms. So with the h-bar squared terms to zero, you would simply get back the old geodesic equation. Now recall that to derive the Rajchaudhuri equation, we put the geodesic equation term to zero here. Instead of zero, we have to substitute what we get, which is not zero, but we get what we get, which is these terms here, right? These two terms here. And again, so then you derive the Reichhauser equation, take trace, do whatever is required. And then you get this. So this is again the old Reichhauser equation, and these are the quantum correction terms. Okay? And again, just again for simplicity, the explicit derivations I did for time-like geodesics, you have a mass and that kind of thing. But you can redo everything for null geodesics as well. You have to define the trace, the expansion not as trace of u a comma b, but k, where k is the momentum. And then the Reichhauser equation looks exactly this without the mass term. So just to say that it holds good for time-like as well as. Oh, sorry. It's the Klein-Gordon. So this is the box plus m squared. This is the conformal, like to make the equation conformally invariant if you want. So epsilon 1 is 1/6 or 0. And this term comes from, if you do the Klein-Gordon from the Dirac equation, in certain ways of doing it, there's a term like this. In any case, this term doesn't enter the Reichhauser equation. So it's a scalar. Oh, sigma just the Pauli matrices. So as I said, you. Just drop that. Yeah. Okay. Because it doesn't end. This one doesn't enter in the Reichhauser equation anyway. Okay. So let's just maybe drop it. So. Little f. This one?
Yeah,
this is an anti-symmetric, sorry?
What was it before it got dropped?
Before it got dropped? Oh, we don't care because we drop it. But it's an anti-symmetric kind of matrix, so that, you know, anti-symmetric times. No, it's not the Pauli matrix. This is the, anyway, let's not, yeah. Sorry? No, it's not. It's, no. One could do everything with the electromagnetic field, and I have done it, and you get extra terms in the Reichhauser equation. But anyway, we dropped it, so let's just, I should not put more than what's necessary, run into trouble. But.
So basically, you've got a Klein-Gordon equation, maybe conformally coupled. You're using some kind of geometric optics approximation to get a geodesic equation.
Absolutely.
And now it's not really a geodesic because there's this quantum pressure term.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I have it in the last transparency. So Reichhauser equation has been derived by astrophysicists, numerical relativists, from the Klein-Gordon equation exactly using the geometrical optics.
And so that d squared r, is that contracted with the full curve metric or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a metric, curve space-time metric hiding in that.
It is. Well, some of the things like in the paper, I have box here. In this particular macro, they wouldn't take box as a command.
So.
It
should be a grad, yeah. Or it could be a semicolon here. Yeah, and or it's a semicolon here, whatever you, where you like. Yeah. That's what I had, but this, anyway. Wouldn't take too many commands, so I had box here, but whatever. So so it's all covariant, okay. And this is either this or that. Just for simplicity, I base my arguments on the time-like, but you could do on the null as well. So again, once again, like you have this extra term here. Let's concentrate on this term, okay? Without the conformal coupling term, you could work on this term as well. But let's just look at this term here, and again. It depends on the amplitude of the wave function. So I used several test wave function, and it did turn out to be all with a plus sign and 1 over L power 4. So it's repulsive at short distances. But again, it gets better because once again, the tangent vector equation is a first order equation, as you can see. So if this is single valued at all points, then it streamlines. The integral curves are also unique and not non-intersecting. Again. Like, the proof is as simple as that. But in the context of, this quantum trajectories, people have actually drawn these trajectories for lots of systems. And this is how it comes out. It's always non-crossing. And that's a pretty well-known property. So if they don't cross, then, they don't cross. So there is no focusing or no conjugate points. And the geodesics go on forever. So, I work in a classical fixed background. Whatever I do. But in this particular context, there are no conjugate points. Therefore, you know, there are no singularities in the context of geodesic incompleteness because the geodesics will go on forever. Okay? So you can also calculate the correction in the same way. And I don't have the derivation here. However, you can derive the quantum corrections in the same way to the geodesic deviation equation, not the geodesic equation. And once again, the geodesic deviation equation, where eta is the vector which connects like neighboring geodesics, this eta doesn't go to zero anymore. Okay, so you could still have curvature singularities. I mean, the space-time is whatever the space-time you have. So RABCD, the Kretschmann scalar, blows up for Schwarzschild, as we know, at r equal to zero, or you know, for a cosmological context at t equal to zero, the curvatures can still, obviously, they can blow up. However, the geodesics don't really go to that point because they, like, you know, because of the first order equation, they can come very close, but they get deviated. Okay, so therefore, these are regions which appear they are not accessible any longer. Right, so. So that's the main result. Now I'll go to a couple of applications of these results. Now let's look at the Reichhauser equation with the quantum corrections, any version you like. And one of the, and we heard a little bit in yesterday's colloquium too, and we have been known, like we know it for a while now, that the Einstein equation can actually be derived from the Reichhauser equation plus first law of thermodynamics, which is the way Ted Jacobson did his derivation. So if the Reichhauser equation undergoes a change, then the Einstein equation, as derived in that particular way, would undergo a change or modification as well. I call it the Einstein equation of state, just because it's Einstein equation, but it's like, I think the title of Jacobson's paper was Einstein equation as an equation of state, something like that. So I just call it an equation of state. There's some work which we are like kind of writing up with Sam Brownstein, University of York. And so it's in progress. Now, just to recall the arguments of Jacobson's work, and later, you know, lots of other people have worked on it too. So this is like a Rindler horizon. This should be Q. I did write it as Q. When doing the compilation, it changed to theta. I'm not sure why. So this is a heat flowing across the horizon. And the heat is given by, you know, the integral of the stress tensor with the generator of the horizon times the small area of the horizon, then writing this as the surface gravity times the Killing vector with lambda, the affine parameter. You could write it this way. And a change of area, now this is where the Reichhauser comes in, a change of area of the horizon is theta times d lambda times dA, where dA is the element of the horizon, and this is the change of that area, and theta is the expansion. Now look at Reichhauser equation and use this, like assume there's a correction to it and integrate it for very small lambda. This is what you get. Now these extra terms are the new ones, okay? This, the except the last terms, everything is there in, you know, Jacobson's paper. But this is the extra term here. And so I get this extra term here. Now use the first law of thermodynamics. Just assume it's true. Well, Bekenstein, Hawking, whatever. Just assume it's true. And then, so the dS is, now assume that d, like entropy is proportional to some function of area, okay? So that gives this, and then qq equal tds, and dq is this, and when you equate this to that, and this to that, you get this equation here. Again, just that gamma term is a correction term, quantum, classical, whatever, I just leave it as a correction here, okay? And a solution of this equation, again, is t AB, I believe the unique solution of this equation is TAB is RAB plus some function times GAB, and this new term here, gamma NANB, where NA is another null vector, which is perpendicular to the KA null vector in the horizon, which, so minus one or whatever. Okay, so this is the term here. Now you take the trace. Well, first you write the Bianchi identity or the conservation equation. Yes?
That last equation depends on
what you chose for
K.
What you chose for what? Yes, I did.
Observer,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you change the Rindler observer, won't that go to
M10? I don't think so. This is pretty much for any horizon, any.
Yeah, but I mean, we could be near flat space. I mean, this is not
Oh, you mean the temperature?
All horizons, it's just some horizon that
Right. So,
by hand, so you can introduce a different horizon.
So the temperature would change, is that?
Well, I'm saying animal change. I just, that equation looks to me
a bird foliation.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that you have a different modification of the Einstein equation for each from the observer.
Okay, at the end of the day, so, okay, yeah.
There's no single space time anymore.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. But hopefully, in the end, it wouldn't matter, as we shall see. Yeah, I think so. I think it wouldn't matter. Let's just, yeah. I think it wouldn't matter. Correct me if I'm wrong. We just need to assume these two, even if they're not unique. And so long as these two hold, it should not matter, I think. Let's just, yeah. So we take the conservation of the Bianchi identity, and from that, it follows that the f function must look like this. Again, this is the extra term here. Tracing the equation, we get an exact form of f, and lambda is an integration constant, which of course we see that it's a cosmological constant. We put this back in here, we get the Einstein equation, and this is the correction. Now, this part, of course, was derived again by Jacobson, and this is the extra term here. Now, there are two things. First, the important thing I think interesting is that now for the particular gamma which we got, and if we look at our Rechauder equation correction, it's HAB, right? Like this is the term here. And if we substitute HAB here, this term is zero. So basically there are no corrections, okay? And again, that's the sense which I meant that, you know, even if it's ambiguous, so long as this, you know, this holds, continues to hold good for all such, you know, choices.
Yeah. But I don't see why that vanishes,
because
gamma is a scalar.
Yeah, but n squared is 0, isn't it?
But it's not n squared, it's n a and b, it's a tensor.
With HAB, that makes it n squared, isn't it?
But you're not contracting it. That's what I don't see. Right, those are free indices.
So I see. So the trace of the Einstein tensor is zero, but yeah,
the trace
would be zero.
But not the thing itself.
Okay.
It looks like you've got some new kind of null fluid there.
Yeah, a new kind of null fluid, and that's in the next transparency. Actually, I do get a new kind of. You can interpret a new kind of fluid. I guess I just looked at the trace, which
trace
is a new,
trace
doesn't change with the Einstein equation. Okay, so. So I'm glad I had the work in progress there. So, but yeah. So this is what I get anyway. So, so there's no correction. Well, what I mean is like here you see we assume that the Einstein equation is a local equation, right? However, the only way that this term could be local is when, you know, S1K, S1 is the derivative of entropy with respect to area. This doesn't depend on anything, it's a constant, which means like S must be proportional to A.
But didn't you put in that S proportional to the derivation?
I use the first law of thermodynamics, and then I assume that entropy is like some function of A. So I had the derivative term. Yeah, I use the first law of thermodynamics, that I assume. But the entropy area, it must be a linear function. And linear, and I think it's stronger because again, like, you know, in Jacobson's derivation, it's not just linear just by matching constant and things like that. I think the 1/4 comes out too. So that would happen here too. Okay, so there are no, yeah, so that's what I meant. So the area proportionality seems to be robust in my mind, if you look at it this way. Or the Einstein equation, again, like what we discussed, so the trace is vanishing, so I guess that's the result. Okay, so now the last thing I'd like to observe is, you have the Rechauder equation, which is the, you know, geodesic focus. Yeah, yeah. Sorry?
It's a comment.
Okay, of course.
Is it true that what you just did now is independent dependent of what you discussed before about focusing or not focusing. I mean, they both depend on a modified Roy Chaudhry equation. But this is just using that thermodynamic input.
That's a good question. So
because I'm skeptical about the first thing. I mean, I'm skeptical about how this affects singularity.
Right.
So I just want to make sure in my own mind.
Right.
I think it is.
Because the focusing or the no focusing depends on the no crossing. And the no crossing depends on, the no crossing depends on, let's just do the non-relativistic because I have a bigger font for the non-relativistic. But so the no crossing is because of the first order nature of the equation. Right? So
But I meant the whole discussion, you didn't quite say it, but the input, or maybe you did, you implied that one would avoid the singularity theorem because of this model.
No, I
did. You did or did not?
No. What I meant was that the singularity theorems no longer hold good for these trajectories.
But that's confusing.
Sure.
Because you haven't, there's nothing that ties to the singularity theorem is the Einstein equations come in here for the probability of the density tied to the Einstein equation by there being a new density itself and that's how the Einstein equation.
Right. Right. But the singularity theorems, as far as I understand, they are based on mostly a set of global arguments. And the first part of the argument is like a set of theorems which prove that for the trajectories or geodesics that one uses, there always exists, for reasonable energy conditions, there always exists conjugate points. And that assumption or those theorems are no longer true. Oh, yeah. Okay, so of course. So if we confine ourselves to just, you know, regular geodesics, of course the theorems are true. But if we try to apply those theorems, but geodesics don't exist because classical mechanics is incomplete. So trajectories are not there. So the closest in certain sense, you can go to trajectories are these quantum trajectories or quantum geodesics or Bohmian geodesics, whatever. And because there are no trajectories. Right. But they use the Roy Chaudhry equation. Right. Well, but okay, this is the part. Yeah.
So the second part of your presentation, which is the more interesting one, where you change the Einstein effect. You're not going to change the fact that the Einstein, that the solution, the generic solution of the Einstein equation is singular.
Well, but singularity in a certain sense, right? Singularity in the sense that the Roy Chaudhry equations. That's right, but
now you're saying I don't care.
Right.
For physics.
Right.
That's
right. I don't care beyond the point because the geodesic there are no geodesics. So this is closest to what we have, which in the H bar going to zero. But then the question is, how relevant are those theorems if there are no geodesics? I mean, the particles don't follow those trajectories. Beyond the point, if you invoke quantum mechanics, those geodesics don't really mean.
Invoking quantum mechanics doesn't get you out of the fact they don't get to a balance. Your second point, altering the Einstein equation, may get to a balance that eliminates the singularity. Your first discussion just says that quantum particles don't go on geodesics and therefore they don't focus.
That's right. And therefore, well, yeah, but then we have one, I suppose one can question what's the, you know, importance of the singularity theorems stated purely in terms of classical geodesics, because classical right. Right.
True physical singularity.
That's right. That's.
It would be better if they invite curvature
singularity. Yeah. Well, that discussion is relevant because curvature singularities are like, you know, that's what people thought, right? Like infinite curvature means singularities. But then they have their problems. Like cutting out a particular part of the manifold has its problems too. So they, you know, the geodesic incompleteness. And what I'm trying to say here. That's right.
And having matter, you follow a different equation, even though it's space time, you're not going to get rid of those curvatures.
That's right. That's so, but.
But modifying Einstein equation, as you're now proposing the second part of your talk, might get rid of curvatures.
It could, but again, we can discuss about it again, but I do, you know. Want to again, you know, kind of emphasize that, yeah, the singularity theorems applied to geodesics, of course, they hold good. But then, since geodesics are, you know, have, like, geodesics are not really physically relevant if you take age bar into account, it's something else, and this could be something else, then the singularity theorem should be redone for this something else. That's my point of view. Okay, we can. Well, okay, let's agree for. But that's a circular thing, right? How do you know it's singular before you prove the singularity, you know?
Well, I mean, if you're using a classical geometry and you have a classical manifold, you still have definitely.
But I am doing quantum mechanics, so. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, but I'm glad. And also, like, you know, in a Friedman-Robertson-Walker, that's what I was going to say next, that, so Reichauer equation, can be used to derive the Friedman equation or the second order Friedman equation. So therefore, you know, if you have corrections to the Friedman Reichauer equation, then they would imply corrections to the Friedman equations as well. So in the usual, the homogeneous isotropic dark energy plus dark matter plus regular matter and general relativity cosmology with a scale factor, and one needs to identify the expansion with, you know, this quantity here, A dot over A, and the usual R with rho plus 3P, then one gets the second order Friedman equation as usual. This is the second order Friedman equation. Now you get this extra term here, okay? And now again, like for this trajectories, they are not geodesics, but these quantile trajectories or Bohmian trajectories, this would not cross. So they would remain. They could go very close to each other, but they will not cross, right? Even they will not cross or meet. But the other thing, which again, you know, it was known in the context of quantum mechanics in this Bohmian whatever, that this term here, the quantum potential, can be thought of as addition of matter, right? They can be it's like addition of matter, which is, you know, dependent on the wave function whatever. But you can add this, you have this term, you can interpret it as matter, and just look at the second order Friedman equation. One could either at this level anyway. One could either club this, like combine this with the lambda term or the fluid term, right? And we will just explore both options because we don't know what it is. So one could, this is.
I don't understand, it's just the same equation.
Yeah, one difference is like, you know, this is a constant where this would be evolving. So
for a.
Yeah. So at this level, what I call, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you know, like the lambda or a fluid, their evolution in terms of the scale factor is different, right? Because the. It depends on the omega or the W, the P over rho ratio. So, but
different languages are describing different languages, two different languages
The same. At this level, you could think it as an addition to lambda, in which case the lambda has a p over omega, which is p over rho, which is minus 1, right? Yeah. Or you could think it in terms of matter, where it's 1/3 or 0 or something like that.
Yeah.
So let's just call it lambda and see what we get.
At this level,
yeah.
What is telling the system what that script R is doing?
This one?
Yeah. What equations are, like, if you tell me script R and rho and p, I
right.
can figure out how
that's
the
right. This is a solution of the Klein-Gordon equation.
So that's still in there.
It's still in there.
So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Klein-Gordon field, and that's the real.
This is the amplitude of the Klein-Gordon field. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the thing is, like.
So now a Klein-Gordon field and an FRW vector.
Yeah. With, you know, with all this, yeah. And that's part of the problem, if you like, that this thing depends on the wave function. It's not just the equation, but the solution. So anyway, so let's assume that this is a part of lambda anyway, and let's see what this is. So again, for the wave functions considered earlier, like the wave functions are Gaussian or with the interaction, whatever, whatever, like a few wave functions, that's all I could test. In all the cases, these terms here, which I call lambda q, just because I add it with the cosmological constant, this term here turns out to be 1 over L square, where L is the length scale within the wave function, all right? So in all the three or four cases that I checked. And from dimensional grounds, I mean, either it's 0 or infinity, or it must be some number over L square. And what is this L? Now, it's a quantum wave function. Therefore, it's probably reasonable to assume, which is what I've assumed. I assumed L to be the Compton wavelength, because that's typically for any quantum particle, that's the spread that you normally put in. And if it's a Compton wavelength, then, you know, this L is h bar over mc, as we know, where m is the mass. And if we just, now up to here, well, up until here it's exact, then I assume all the wave function that I could think of, and then I get this, and then I get this, and then for L, suppose I just substitute the observable mass of observable length of the universe, which is 14 billion kilometers or whatever it is, roughly speaking, then this mass, the corresponding mass, turns out to be about 10 power minus 68 kilograms or 10 power minus 32 electron volts. And what could that mass be? Well, the obvious choice is this is a mass of a small mass of a particle, which instead of following an inverse square law, follows a Yukawa kind of potential or force. Okay, and if we put this mass in, then this quantum potential term, the order of magnitude that it gives is pretty close to the observed cosmological constant, which is 10 power minus 23 in Planck units. And the reason, of course, I mean, then again, like, what mass this could be? And one, again, obvious guess is it could be the graviton or the photon mass. And then, you know, this is like far from the first time, and I'm sure I've missed many references. And starting from Zwicky, 1961, and there's a paper by Rob here as well. So there are lots of people who actually propose from different backgrounds, from different points of view, this graviton mass, all right? Or experimentalists who propose graviton mass, whose bounds is consistent with this. So this is like the least graviton, or rather the most highest graviton mass or the photon mass that we could have. And again, you can't really rule it out, because it's only inverse square law, can at most be tested up to the length scale of the universe and not more. So that's what we get. And that's where I will kind of summarize with a few more points. So summary, well, we replace the classical with quantum Bohmian trajectories, and I understand that, you know, and again, just to restate, the singularity theorems for geodesics, of course, it holds good, but if geodesics don't exist, then we have to do something else. That's my point of view anyway. And so classical to quantum Rayleigh-Schneider equation, and then no conjugate points, no geodesic implotness. Well, okay, I should probably modify this. No incompleteness of these trajectories. So no focusing of these trajectories. That would be, so I'd be happy to make that change here. And applications, well, no change. Well, there we saw there is a change in the Einstein equation of state. I just took the trace and said no change. And this, all this is actually, you know, as one of you Rob pointed out, like, these are actually corrections to the geometrical optics approximation. So you can cast everything in the geometrical optics language. And the Rayleigh-Schneider equation is exact geometrical optics. This is like the first leading correction to the geometrical optics approximation. It's just casting the whole thing in a language of optics. It could have astrophysics implications, I don't know. Connections to path integral, this is a question independent of this talk. It's like a question relevant to the Bohmian thing. Violations of the equivalence principle, again, these are not geodesics, and we know quantum mechanics does violate, seem to violate the equivalence principle. If that's the case, there could be signatures. If we can somehow, you know, these trajectories, if we can somehow incorporate fermions explicitly in the picture, and this was part of my physics motivation that if you have fermions, then they could be further defocusing just because of the exchange forces, right? Like the exclusion principle, they can't be in the same place at the same time. But per se, the Klein-Gordon equation can be derived from the Dirac equation, but I don't know if you put spin into the picture, what happens, I don't know. And one interesting thing could be like numerically plotting quantum trajectories in curved space-time. I don't think anybody has really done it, so that's something. So I don't see how the crossing can occur because it's a first-order equation, but it would just be interesting to see for simple curved space-times, and that's something which, you know, I'd like to do if somebody else wants to do, but it's not done. And again, like as I hope I stated in the beginning, if I didn't, I stated in the paper for sure, that we of course consider a classical background and what we get is what we get. If you have a quantum space-time background and you know, a space-time which is not exactly classical, things will change for sure at the Planck length or whatever. We expect, I expect these results at the basic, the main results to still hold good, maybe with some more corrections, but I don't know. This is what I did. So thank you very much, and I'll be happy to answer any, try to answer any questions. If you have a classical background, you can write the geodesic equations and there will be solutions to those equations. Yes, but they're classical. Therefore, so I don't disagree with that statement. It's just that I'm questioning the importance beyond a certain point because h bar is not zero. So things like, just look at the Young's double slit experiment. Of course, you know, there are classical trajectories. They don't give us interference. Therefore, to actually look at physical phenomena, the classical trajectories are insufficient. They don't capture the whole predictions that we actually observe.
I think the argument you want to make, there is an argument.
Yeah. That's a
followed up with your modification of the derivation of Einstein equation from the Rorschach equation. You find that with your modification of the cosmological equation and then to the Einstein equation of state to each other. That's very interesting. That's very
interesting. Yeah, it's all related. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. All right.
So I think the claim that I was going to say that the quantum geodesics, or whatever you call them, trajectories won't cross. I mean, won't
meet.
Won't see singularity.
Won't focus, yeah. So
that,
then,
that's a property of the space time. In other words, what if you have a space time and you impose and you have a particular solution of the Klein-Gordon equation or whatever it is, then from that you may be able to deduce a guide and you have a guidance equation coming from that equation, then you will be able to deduce geodesics which will never, or pseudo geodesics, which will never, by definition, and for the reason you pointed out, they'll never cross.
That's what we have here, yeah.
But that just doesn't exclude singularity. I mean, you could take a standard Friedman, Robertson, Walker spacetime with the singularity, and those geodesics will still hit the singularity, even if they don't cross.
Yeah, but when you say singularity, I believe you have the definition of singularity in mind, right? Which is geodesic incompleteness.
No,
but that's not a good definition of singularity.
Well, that's a good definition. It's a better definition, I think. The problem is that the theorems, I think if people could prove theorems leading to the conclusion that you had a curvature singularity, everyone would do that.
I agree.
The proofs work, it's only able to prove a weaker statement.
Mm-hmm. I entirely agree, but that's an important point, right? That's why they had to go to the geodesic incompleteness definition to, you know, define.
So what I'm trying to say is this changing of the geodesics is no protection against singularity.
As defined in terms of geodesic incompleteness, yeah.
No, it's not, because these things will also be incomplete. If you have a collapsing space time which has a big crunch, these will still be incomplete. They won't cross.
That's where I'll have to think about it, because what I have here, it shows that you could, you know, this trajectories, they would go on forever because they can't meet.
No, because you've implicitly assumed that the space-time has
no singularity.
You just cut a hole out of the
space-time. Well, then you have to go into whether it's inextendable or not, and we can go into that kind of thing. Like, just cutting out of a hole is like, you have to, it should not be a part. Right, absolutely. But you see, like, you know, classically, again, I go back to the non-relativistic example, not because the relativity is incomplete, but it's just easier to talk or for me or demonstrate. But in a classical space-time, you could have, you know, the R equal to zero singularity for a hydrogen atom, right? Like, you know, which is very similar to the... But if you look at this... Even here, if you have the hydrogen atom R equal to zero, the Coulomb singularity, the Bohmian trajectories will never go there. It will never meet at R equal to zero. It will just like, will go very close, really close. And if the proton charge is very large, it will go really, really close, but it won't go to R equal to zero.
Suppose you have a collapsing space-time.
Right.
It reaches a curvature singularity. Where can the trajectories go? The only way they can avoid that is by becoming space-like and running on it.
Or they become static. I think the idea would be they would collapse in, focus, and you get another remnant, and you just have some highly dense object that's balanced off by quantum pressure.
Yeah, that's right, but that would take a modification of the Einstein equation. That's what I'm trying to say. It might be that there's a whole picture that all hangs together in some beautiful way, and it actually avoids the singularity. Mm-hmm. But the mere fact that they can't cross is not going to do it.
But you see, even in the picture, you know, which again, it's very interesting, and so I don't mean it. And I'm interested. So like the R equal to infinity that you say, the curvature, right?
Yeah.
So that's like because of the gravitational attraction. But if you look at this quantum potential, it does provide a counteracting repulsion, right? So we don't know, and that's...
That's a potential for the geodesics.
That's right, so they...
Modify the Einstein equations, yes, that may do away with the singularity. And that might be related in some deep physical way to the trajectories. But I don't think, it just seems to me that the mere fact, I'm just disputing something which I think you implied, which is that the mere fact of the first order guidance equation means that you would avoid, for example, a big crunch. I don't think that conclusion.
Yeah. Obviously,
because
I have to.
You will still have that geometry still can exist.
Of course.
And the geodesics in it will still be incomplete,
mm-hmm.
even if there are the quantum.
Yeah. Well, the way I understood the theorems is like, of course, you have the space time, but the curvature blowing up is yes, absolutely, of course.
Can I just suggest that maybe we close the general discussion and then you can continue in private? So let's just thank our speaker.